we all connected over the issue of reproductive choice. That was where I learned the most valuable lesson about you have as much power as they think you do. And everyone on the other side said, we can't take a position. Our members take a number of positions, so we have to be neutral on this. And we said, bullshit.
And it just sort of flowed out of me. I had no notes. I was shaking like a leaf. My voice was cracking. The bottom line is, this is my body, and I am going to make that decision. And I remember getting a standing ovation, and I was absolutely blind, Scott. I didn't see a thing.
And it used to make me crazy that they would take the few women from caucus and make them the apologists for the government's position. And they would have to go out there and try to justify to other women why the government wouldn't act, even though that wasn't their position and they were fighting like hell inside cabinet and caucus to get them to act. It needed to be dealt with. This is an issue that affects women, their wages, and their life. It was an actual economic issue that impacted on us. And therefore, the movement should take a position.
You are listening to Celebrating Our Past, Preparing Our Future, a podcast series created through a collaboration between UFCW Local 832 and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg, documenting a variety of events and issues within the union's history and what they mean for Local 832 today. This episode is entitled Labor People for Choice, the Abortion Issue in the Manitoba Labor Movement. Starting in the late 1960s, there was a growing movement for women's reproductive choice. This movement brought together feminists both within the labor movement and outside of it to fight for a common cause. The issue of abortion was very prominent throughout the 70s into the late 80s. There were some significant events that led up to the battle that went on in the Manitoba labor movement over abortion. In May of 1969, a bill passed that decriminalized abortion in Canada. Abortion was still not totally legal either, as women still needed a letter from a psychiatrist to get a legal abortion and see a therapeutic abortion committee. In 1970, there was an abortion caravan. The caravan went from Vancouver to Ottawa and meant to challenge the 1969 abortion law. In 1983, Henry Morgenthaler opened up an abortion clinic in Winnipeg, which was raided several times by police. This was the backdrop to a long-sustained fight for feminist activists to gain abortion rights for women. In 1970, there was an abortion caravan. The caravan went from Vancouver to Ottawa and meant to challenge the 1969 abortion law. In 1983, Henry Morgenthaler opened up an abortion clinic in Winnipeg, which was raided several times by police. This was the backdrop to a long-sustained fight for feminist activists to gain abortion rights for women. Several women within the Manitoba labor movement were very involved in the fight for abortion rights, both within the union movement and the wider society. Darlene Jevitz and Susan Hart Kolobaba were two union feminist activists that were involved with the abortion rights movement. Darlene Jevitz was the first female union rep hired on at United Food and Commercial Workers Local 832. Susan Hart Kolobaba was the second. Both used their position to influence and push both Local 832 and the labor movement to recognize women's issues. Darlene and Susan explained the background to the activism around abortion rights in the Manitoba labor movement.
In the early days, there were so few of us that we kind of all knew each other. People, you know, from QP that I got to know, Lorraine Sigurdson, Sandy Oakley, the Maureens, Miller and Morrison from QP, and Susan and I, and some other women from MGU, and that started to connect. So there's that whole thing. So how we connected to the sort of the more central feminist movement, it was almost like it happened in parallel. We all connected over the issue of reproductive choice. So there's where the bridge came. So, for example, at the same time all the stuff was going on with Henry Morgenthaler opening the clinic here, and the Pauley government was arresting, or not, they weren't arresting them, but, you know, we were urging them not to charge, you know, the women who were working as nurses in the Morgenthaler clinic. You know, Henry Morgenthaler wanted to be arrested. He wanted his day in court, but these women were just helping, you know.
At the time, there was a lot of activity going on here. Morgenthaler was interested in a clinic. We'd seen many women not being able to avail themselves of appropriate care here. People were still leaving Manitoba to go and take care of things that needed taking care of. And so the women were plugged in to the broader community here. There was a lot of activity in the broader community as well about the issue of women's reproductive services. And the government was dealing with it as well. So the Polly administration was dealing with it, and it used to make me crazy because we would go and have a rally on the steps asking them to bring in services for women paid by Medicare or Manitoba Health, and they thought it was too big a political bomb, and so they weren't prepared to go there. But they always used to send Muriel Smith out. Now, Muriel was always pro-choice, but she was also deputy premier, and it used to make me crazy that they would take the few women from caucus and make them the apologists for the government's position. And they would have to go out there and try to justify to other women why the government wouldn't act, even though that wasn't their position and they were fighting like hell inside cabinet and caucus to get them to act. So it was really frustrating at the time.
Prior to the Manitoba Federation of Labour Convention in 1983, an NDP MLA, Marva Smith, brought up the issue of abortion rights at the Manitoba Federation of Labour Convention in 1972. She was dismissed and laughed at. More than a decade later, union activists were able to get the issue of abortion on the table. Darlene and Susan give a play-by-play of the lead-up to the convention and the battle inside it.
So we formed the Labour People for Choice, LPC, because we wanted labour to have its own position. At the time, the executive of the Manitoba Federation of Labour was entirely male. There were no women. And they had an Equal Rights and Opportunities Committee, which was the de facto women's committee. So the Equal Rights and Opportunities Committee affiliated to the Coalition for Reproductive Choice. They did it because the Canadian Labour Congress had adopted a position that was pro-choice.
And the executive board, which was all male at the time, had made a determination that each of the committees of the Federation, structurally and by the bylaws or the Constitution, are committees of the Federation. They don't have standing other than as part of the Federation, and each of the people on those committees are appointed by the affiliates. And so they were saying, you can't just go off and do this without our saying yes to it. And it was interesting because Gary Dewar was the president of the Manitoba Government Employees Association at the time, and he was leading the charge against us doing this. He thought that it was a divisive issue and that the labor movement shouldn't take a position on this. I guess they felt it was no win. And certainly the executive board was split as well. So their position was the Equal Opportunities Committee cannot do this. Therefore, you have to disaffiliate yourself from the coalition.
The day we heard it happen, it was a Friday. Dick Martin was the president of the Federation of Labor. So we all of us, Susan, myself, Sandra, many of the women in Manitoba, went into Dick's office one at a time that whole day. One after another, just going after him about it. And what the hell do you think you're doing? And why are you doing this? And I said to him, there's going to be blood in the convention floor on this one, because we're not going to take it lightly. You don't order us to do things that we have a right to do. And this is fundamental.
And we said, well, if you're not reflecting what is important to us as members of your federation, and there's a lot of women members in the unions here, we'll just have to find a way to make that change, and we'll make it policy, and then no matter what the convention says, the executive board can't overturn it. You make decisions between conventions, but convention is the ultimate decision maker and policy maker. And so we set out to put in resolutions to convention to ensure that there was a pro-choice position taken by the Federation.
So we organized. And we plotted and we planned, and Dick got nervous because these women were plotting and planning. And that was where I learned the most valuable lesson about you have as much power as they think you do. So Dick took Susan and I for lunch. But he was, how do we stop this? How do we stop this? And we said, rescind. And put women on the executive, by the way, now. That's another issue.
And, of course, the board said no to it, and but they gave it to the Equal Opportunities Committee. Each of the committees looked at all the resolutions in their area. And the Equal Opportunities Committee said absolutely they were interested in supporting this.
we said, we're taking a resolution. You want a resolution? We'll take a pro-choice resolution to the convention floor. And we did.
And so they had to figure out a way to get it defeated. So the committee brought the resolution to the floor, and there was a fair amount of debate on it. There was enough political procedure on it that the media were having trouble following what was happening or the importance of what was happening. A lot of our affiliates didn't understand enough of the procedure, so we had gone to them and said, we'll have runners come to the table. The firefighters were one. They didn't understand, you know, should we support this amendment? Should we defeat the amendment? How do you want us to vote on any of these? We don't know what the outcome will be. So we had runners that would go to the end of the table and say, vote yes, vote yes. And they knew who was assigned, and so they would vote the way we said. The procedure was so difficult. We had a woman named Lisa Donner, who was the Occupational Health Center executive director at the time, sit at the media table to try and explain to them what the meaning of it was. That means it will have to go back. That will mean it's defeated, you know. But we had a lot of debate, and then the lineups at the microphones were huge.
Heather Grant Jury was the first female president of the Winnipeg Labor Council. Heather explains what it was like being a young woman in the labor movement and her experience at the MFL convention in 1983 speaking in favor of reproductive choice.
And I remember the choice debate, and I remember, my first convention. Everyone put their hand up, and I put my hand up, and then I go, what the heck did we just vote on? Because nobody taught you this stuff. And I remember Gary Doerr when he was president of the Federation and the choice issue. I was going out with a fellow, Don King at the time, who was the strongest feminist I've ever met in a man. And we're in Brandon at the MFL convention, and the choice debate was coming on the floor. And Don was very, very emotional about this issue. And again, I'm just learning, going, why are you getting so upset about, you don't know what this means. This is huge ramifications. This is about the right to choose. So I started to understand the issue. And I remember Darlene and Susan saying to me, just hold this spot at the microphone, because we have to win the microphone battle. And as I'm standing in line at the microphone, holding it for one of them, being Susan, Darlene, or Lorraine Sigurdsson, the big leaders to speak, I'm getting closer and closer and closer, and no one's coming to relieve me. So all of a sudden, I'm at microphone 5, and Gary Doerr says, Mike 5, and there's nobody to take my spot. So I spoke, and it just sort of flowed out of me. I had no notes. I was shaking like a leaf. My voice was cracking, but I just talked about a young woman making choices like if I was raped, what would happen if I didn't have the right to choose whether I kept that child or put it up for adoption, or what would happen, you know, to me. The bottom line is, this is my body, and I am going to make that decision. And I remember getting a standing ovation, and I was absolutely blind, Scott. I didn't see a thing. And I was so mad at those guys, because I thought they had set me up. And they just said no. They lost track of who they needed to go to next, and all of a sudden it was Mike 5, and it was your turn, and you did just great.
The MFL becoming pro-choice was a major victory for feminist activists in the labor movement. Darlene and Susan reflect on what this meant for the labor movement, as well as the internal divisions that were brought out during the debate.
So it was pretty, it was a pretty dramatic thing. I mean, you know, if you tell the story and it doesn't even give you the drama of this, and this all took place in Brandon as well. So everybody was away from home, and they were sort of in this environment where we were all stuck together all the time. So it was quite an interesting thing. And it was the real beginning of women recognizing their power, you know? Because you really do have as much as they think you do. They thought we were huge. And it was like 5 of us sitting around drinking wine. We'll tell them that now. Gary Doerr will still tell me to this day that it was because we had the committee on our side. He's still analyzing it. I think with Dick and with Gary and with many others, they didn't want the controversy. They were trying to manage it. They didn't want the anti-choice people jumping all over them and threatening to disaffiliate and stuff like that. And they knew that they were all the leaders, so nobody would be disaffiliating because they were pro-choice, you know, if they took that position, because the women weren't in any position to make that happen. So they were really worried about making people unhappy, much the same way the NDP was for quite some time, or certain members of the NDP were. until they finally took the position, and now they know they've lost every vote they're going to lose over it. And so, you know, and we did have some very strong people who considered themselves pro-life who were reps. Some of them told Bernard that he should be, you know, managing his women better.
So it was very good, and we had a lot of people who supported us. Our own union took a position in favor of that vote, even though our president, Bernard Kristoff, was very, very anti-choice, very strong Catholic upbringing, not prepared to move on it. But he had taken a position with the executive board, and he could not go against their own resolution and their recommendation. So he told us at our caucus when we made the decision what we were going to do. He had lost his vote, but he told us that everybody needed to pay attention to the caucus outcome. And there was a couple of people who tried. He stood up with the executive board against freedom of choice. But when other people from our caucus tried to do that with him, he basically put his hands on their shoulders and pushed them back in their seats. There was a democratic decision here, and he was going to make sure they lived with it. So I really admired him for that. But there were lots of good people out there that were supportive. Leslie Spillett, who's now active in the Aboriginal community, she was working for the International Lady Garment Workers at the time, and she was certainly out front with us. We had pretty broad coverage. The firefighters were very helpful, you know, wanted all their votes counted. It was pretty good. Yeah, good days back then.
As Darlene pointed out, it was a group of dedicated activists that were able to change policy at the Manitoba Federation of Labour. This represented not only a shift within the labour movement, but the wider society as well, culminating in the 1988 Supreme Court decision that struck down the previous abortion law to be unconstitutional. What this illustrates is the internal divisions within the labour movement, which are always present but rarely seen by an outsider, as well as the kind of battles the progressive element of the labor movement has to undertake to win important victories. Have been listening to the podcast series Celebrating Our Past, Preparing Our Future, documenting the rich history of United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 832. The podcast series is produced through a partnership between United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 832, and the Oral History Center at the University of Winnipeg. Music by Broke for Free, Christian Bjorklund, Gillicuddy, Jazz Har, and Project 5AM. Narration by Scott Price, with production assistance from Kent Davies. For more information about the Oral History Center, go to oralhistorycenter.ca. For more information about UFCW Local 832, go to ufcw832.com.